It's KUOW. I'm Bill Radke. Thank you for joining us again today. You know who foretold the Seattle boom? My next guest did 15 years ago. He called it the rise of the creative class, an urban revival where knowledge workers and creative professionals would cluster in cities and build great things and solve problems and make those places vibrant and thriving. Richard Florida sold his influential vision to cities, including Seattle. Well, it didn't all work out quite like he thought it would. Richard Florida, welcome back to KUOW.
It's great to be with you.
Is Seattle a great example of what you meant when you described the coming urban renaissance?
Well, you know, that's a great question. Seattle featured heavily in my 2002 book, The Rise of the Creative Class. And I recall a passage I wrote about witnessing a group of rabble-rousers pounding pots and pans, walking through Belltown, I believe it was, saying, keep the construction and construction noise out. So even then, even though I don't think I could fully realize it, Seattle was a place that was at the absolute cutting edge of what later became the urban revival. And, you know, I think that I really could not predict. I think, you know, people ask if I'm sorry, do I feel I got anything wrong? I'm not particularly sorry. I think my new book is a logical extension of the old book. I don't think I got much wrong. I think, as you kindly said, I predicted that this knowledge group, this professional group, these artists, these call them the creative class, would come back to cities. I think I fully underpredicted how much of a tsunami wave this would be. And not across the whole country. Of course, it's great that Detroit has made a comeback in Pittsburgh, my home city at that time. But in the places that are the epicenters, the Bay Area, New York City, Boston, Washington, D.C., Los Angeles, and your own Seattle, I could never have predicted what would happen.
Well, some people in Seattle have obviously thrived. It's worked out, except your new book is called The New Urban Crisis. So how have urban revivals not worked out like you thought?
Well, I think this book is the logical extension 15 years later of Rise of the Creative Class. And if Rise of the Creative Class was celebrating or detailing or outlying or identifying the green shoots of urban revival as cities like Seattle, quite at the cutting edge of this, you know, Amazon was already in the old hospital. South Lake Union was already starting to be built. So at the time, I used Seattle as an example of an urban tech. You know, the Silicon Valley was suburban tech companies. Seattle already was a pioneering example of urban tech. What I think happened in the intervening years, because my book, the data went up to 1999, it's really between the year 2000 and now that the urban revival, not only in Seattle, but across the country, really accelerates. And so what you had was a streaming in, not just of young people, but baby boomers, wealthy people, wealthy foreigners, tech companies, not just in Seattle, but, you know, New York is a big surprise to me that tech companies actually has a bigger venture capital backed tech industry than does Seattle. So all of this came back to the city, increasing inequality, increasing the segregation of races and classes, making housing unaffordable. And I just want to add this, because of the Amazon thing, I actually looked this weekend at housing affordability in Seattle versus other places. And I was shocked to see, even someone who's supposedly in the know like me, that Seattle was, yes, it was more affordable than the Bay Area by probably half, but it was just as expensive, if not more expensive, at the metropolitan level than metropolitan Boston, metropolitan Washington, D.C., and metropolitan New York City. So you are really in the eyes of this storm of a new urban crisis of growing inequality, growing segmentation, and growing housing unaffordability.
And we know that so well here. It's very obvious. Rich apartments downtown, poverty moving to the suburbs, middle class disappearing. I want to know why. Why didn't our creative tide lift all boats?
Well, it didn't. I mean,
why didn't it?
It certainly didn't. I had seen this as early as 2003. I had written an essay in the Washington Monthly detailing that Seattle and Austin and San Francisco and New York are leading creative edge economies, were also our most unequal. But I don't think it fully dawned on any of us, including myself. I wrote that. I wrote the words. I have the essay. But the divisions, and when it really dawned on me, is not just when I looked at the numbers, they call them Gini coefficients. When I did a simple calculation, you know, you don't even know why you do these things. One day I said, let's look at the amount of money left over after paying for the housing that the knowledge worker has left over, the blue-collar working man has left over, and these service workers, you know, 50% of the Seattle workforce doing low-wage, low-paid routine service work, largely disproportionately women, disproportionately African-American, Hispanic, and Latino. And the numbers that came back just floored me. You know, the creative class had more than enough to afford that condo, but the blue-collar worker and the service worker had nothing, literally nothing left over. They were broke beyond belief. And I think that's when it slapped me in the face. And so we now have a situation where the same clustering of wealth, of technology, of arts and culture in our great cities that kind of fuels our urban revival is carving these terrible divides. Not just terrible divides in that they make us divide us between rich and poor, urbanite and suburbanite, which you aptly said. It creates this horrific backlash, you know, of populism that propelled Donald Trump to office in the United States. So I say in this book, this is not just a contradiction or crisis of urbanity. This is the central crisis of America and its capitalism at our time.
I'm talking with Richard Florida, now the author of The New Urban Crisis. You do have recommendations for cities like Seattle. What are those?
Well, I'll start with a recommendation for Amazon, since we're talking in Amazon's hometown. Amazon has long been a urban company. It's long been downtown in Seattle. It's gotten a lot of great things. It's, according to some, the largest company in the world. Many say one of the best. Its owner, Jeff Bezos, is a striking entrepreneur, and many would argue, along with your own Bill Gates, one of the two richest men in the world. It's just gone out with a bid for a headquarters, and asking dozens of communities around the country to give them financial and tax incentives. I think Amazon should rethink this. It should say to Seattle, and it should say to these communities around the country, we're in with building a more inclusive prosperity with you. We're going to make an Amazon pledge. And not just Amazon, other anchor institutions, the University of Washington, the great medical centers, which have all been part of this revival, the companies that, you know, that are down in the city in South Lake Union, the great real estate developers that are profiting. We brought an urban revival by working together, by working as anchor institutions, hand in glove with city and civic officials. Now we know we have to overcome the new urban crisis. We're going to make an Amazon pledge. And here's what the pledge should say. Instead of just paying our knowledge workers fantastically and giving them good salaries, we employ a lot of service workers, daycare workers, cafeteria workers, people who work to make those knowledge workers and creative class better. We're going to give them a living wage. We're going to give them career ladders. We're going to pay them like the middle class because we so depend on them. Well, our high-tech hotshots can afford housing downtown, but we're going to build workforce housing on our campus for you, the workers of this, and affordable housing in our communities. Places like Seattle need transit. We depend on transit. In contrast to other tech companies that are creating their own private shuttle buses, we're going to work with you and help pay for transit that connects our outlying suburbs to our city. What a model this would show of a great progressive company working with this great city and now taking this, you know, and I need to add this. Amazon is not just locating another headquarters. It has so many distribution facilities and logistics facilities and other offices and innovation centers. It could take that and make an example of how to build a great inclusive community alongside other anchors. That's the kind of gift that the success of Seattle and Amazon could give to itself and to other parts of the country and the parts of the world. And that's I think, where we have to get to.
Well, Richard, if Amazon decides to pay more attention to its shareholders than to your vision, what about the public side of it? Do you think the Seattle city leaders, would you advise them, given the new urban crisis, would you advise Seattle leaders to not give Amazon subsidies and tax breaks? Or would you say, you know, despite the downsides, everybody wants an Amazon. They could leave, give them what they want.
I'm lucky enough at this stage of my life to be asked by cities to help advise them. I've said the same to every single city. Don't give them a dime. Amazon is coming to you because you have a great airport or great talent or a great downtown or walkability. They're going to gain so much for that location. Engage them as a partner in inclusion. Engage them as a partner in inclusive prosperity. Encourage them to work alongside building a more equitable city. And, you know, the benefits to Amazon's brand, you know, I hate to say this because I love these companies and I probably spend the largest share of my income on Amazon.com. But, you know, I was talking to a congressperson from the Silicon Valley who very much supports the tech companies and how much they do in create innovation. And he said to me, you know, Richard, the pitchforks are out. Wake up, folks. The pitchforks are out. People are mad. They're mad at being displaced from their homes. They're mad at the inequity of their city. They're mad in San Francisco. They're protesting, also to some degree in Seattle. They're mad about Airbnb. They're mad about Uber. They're mad. They think some of them think Amazon is a monopoly. I happen to like the company. But boy, oh boy, what good you could do for your brand by, instead of taking the tax break, using that money to help build a great city, to provide affordable housing, you could do good for yourself and your brand, your stock price in the long haul, and your reputation. You can do good for the city. So that's what I think we should do as a nation. And I think, unfortunately, you know, I guess I used to believe that our president or our national government would do this, you know, whether that was President Clinton or the other President Clinton that was supposed to win, or President Obama, all of whom I voted for. And now I realize that America really is a much redder and conservative nation, and the federal government isn't going to help our cities. So the same groups of people anchor institutions, hospitals, universities, medical centers, companies, chambers of commerce, local community groups, labor groups, community groups, neighborhood groups that rebuilt our cities have to also work to make them more inclusive. That's been a big one for me.
Richard, Florida, you've said that you underestimated how the spike in home prices in these creative edge economies, these new urban centers, that spike would more than cover the wealth. It hasn't trickled down as you had hoped. What did you get wrong? What did you not understand about the way capitalism is working today here?
Yeah, I don't think I said that. I think others have put those words in my mouth for me. I think anyone who's read Rise of the Creative Class clearly, I said that our economy was class divided, that the creative class was the ascendant class, the blue-collar working class was declining, and this 50% of service class was struggling. And I said in that, if our cities and creative class didn't wake up, I said this in the last chapter, it's called The Creative Class Must Grow Up, our country would become more divided, and it would be like we are living on two separate worlds. Now, I didn't think that would give us the backlash. I never could have anticipated the backlash would be so severe that it would give us the most dysfunctional president in human history, Donald Trump. But I saw it. And then in 2003, I'm just being candid with you, I wrote an essay for the Washington Monthly in which I showed very clearly that places like Seattle, Washington, D.C., San Francisco, New York were the most unequal metropolitan economies in our country. I think I've just become more and more outspoken about the distributional side of this. And I think they work hand in glove. You know, that's why I think this urban revival is the central contradiction of capitalism. The clustering of activities like Amazon and techies and innovation and economic assets in downtowns is what powers innovation and productivity and wealth in our country. And at the same time, if we don't make it work for us, if we don't have policies like a better minimum wage and more affordable housing and inclusiveness, we get a society that's terribly uneven and divided. So I think I've decided that my goal has to be to advocate for the distributional side and the inclusiveness side. You know, I spoke to 1,500 or 2,000 people who make up the International Economic Development Council. These are the economic developers that build Portland and Seattle and New York and Chicago and all the little towns in between. And we talked about this. We've probably paid too much attention to economic growth and not enough to inclusive economic development. And the one thing that really heartened me is the only applause lines I got were not about how to make more competitive and innovative cities, but how to make our communities, our cities and suburbs more inclusive, and how we all should do that together. So I'm heartened that this message, not only my own shift in emphasis, but this message is being picked up by our cities and communities around the country.
Finally, Richard, Florida, as you've watched these capitalist contradictions, how has all this changed you?
Well, I'm older. You know, I wrote Rise of the Creative Class when I was turning 40. I'm now turning 60. So maybe it makes you a little wiser. I also, because of my career pressure, have two very little young kids. I want a better world for them. And I think my big wake-up call, honestly, was in Toronto, the rise of Rob Ford, the first real populist, and then Donald Trump. And I think I'm really concerned for the future of my country. I think this divide in America, which really is a product of our spatial inequality, not economic inequality, the fact that we have thriving places like Seattle and the Bay Area and New York and the Boston-Washington corridor, and so many places in the middle that are falling apart, I think that's the one. And I am really worried about our nation. But, and I will say this, my cause for optimism lies in our cities. You know, you said a lot of interesting thing about Seattle. We have a higher minimum wage. We're talking about community inclusion. We're working on our transit. You could have added, we voted for Mrs. Clinton. We have a progressive politics. We want to be a sanctuary city. You could have added many other things. We're kind and inclusive with regard to gay people. Our people vote progressively. I think what gives me hope is that our cities are growing up. And, you know, maybe it's the case even that my own creative class is waking up. I know we're guilt-ridden. None of the creative class likes what's happened. And maybe we're having a wake-up. Maybe Trump was our wake-up call that says, you know, our federal government isn't going to solve our problems. Right here in Seattle, and in all of our towns and communities across the country, we're going to have to solve our own problems. And I think that's my little ray of hope, that this jolt we got because of the divide is going to cause us to work locally to build stronger, better, more sustainable, more prosperous and inclusive communities.
Richard Florida was author of The Creative Class. His latest book is called The New Urban Crisis: How Our Cities Are Increasing Inequality, Deepening Segregation, and Failing the Middle Class, and What We Can Do About It. Great to talk with you, Richard. Thank you.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure being with you again.
So, Richard Florida bemoans what's happened to innovation cities like Seattle, and those same cities are where he places his hopes. Like he said, it's the contradictions of capitalism.